ॐ नमो भागवते वासुदेवाय
ేషు
విద్యాం
భాగవత
భాగవతం When one is fully qualified with all these transcendental attributes and his consciousness is thus completely purified, he is immediately attracted simply by hearing my name or hearing of my transcendental quality. Please repeat, when one is fully qualified,
when one is fully qualified
with all these transcendental attributes,
with all these transcendental attributes,
and his consciousness is thus completely purified,
and his consciousness is thus completely purified,
he is immediately attracted,
simply by hearing my name,
or hearing of my transcendental quality. In the beginning of this instruction, the Lord explained to his mother that madguna sruti matrena, simply by hearing of the name, qualities, form, etc. of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is immediately attracted. A person becomes fully qualified with all transcendental qualities by following the rules and regulations as recommended in different scriptures. We have developed certain unnecessary qualities by material association. And by following the above process, we become free from that contamination. To develop transcendental qualities, as explained in the previous verse, one must become free from these contaminated qualities. So, mattaramano gunayarita paresham shudashaya purushashum yusabhyati sutamatro gunayimam. When one is fully qualified with all these transcendental attributes, and his consciousness is thus completely purified, he is immediately attracted simply by hearing my name or hearing of my transcendental quality. Sri Chaitanya Manomistam Shapatam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gata Mayam Datati Spam Dantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adarita Gadada Shiva Se Gora Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this chapter is explanation of devotional service. So, Kapila Muni is explaining the different qualities of devotional service. So there is adulterated devotional service and there is unadulterated. There are different types of adulteration. It's just like when something's adulterated, it loses its original quality. So we can understand that this adulteration has to be removed in order to regain the original quality. Just like if you put ink in milk, then it's no longer milk. In one sense you could say it still is milk, but it's milk mixed with ink. And that mixing is, even a better example, is if you put sand in sweet rice. Sweet rice is a very palatable preparation. But if you mix sand with it, everyone can imagine the sort of the stress you get from eating a nice big bucket of sweet rice full of half sand and half sweet rice. Wouldn't that distress you? Because the crunchiness, you'd be crunching. And that would actually disturb your mind. So this adulteration is a very important point in spiritual life. Because one, we have to understand what is the nature of adulterated consciousness. Here, Kapila is mentioning, Kapila Muni, that unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted by hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one can then very easily understand, if I'm not attracted to hearing Krishna's name and qualities, then I'm adulterated. So if one is not eagerly enthusiastic to perform devotional service, and if one is not enthusiastic to chant the holy name, if one is not enthusiastic to read Prabhupada's books or to associate with Vaishnava, then there is adulteration in the heart. So there are different types of devotees. It is not that every devotee is the same. We can't categorize and generalize. Just like here, the worship of the deities in the temple by a separatist with a motive for material enjoyment, fame and opulence is devotion in the mode of passion. But here it's mentioning that sometimes there's an aspiration for fame in devotional service. I want to be most famous. Or I want to also have opulence. So when there's some desire for what we call profit, distinction, adoration, these are all anathas in the heart. So artha means that which is desired, that which is desirable for our Krishna consciousness. And anatta means unwanted things within the heart. There are so many unwanted things. So these anattas, they are the adulteration of consciousness. And this word is used very nicely here. This word ashray. This word is used many times. Ashaya. Here it's used as ashaya. So, parisham shuddha. Parisham shuddha. We've heard that word many times. Shuddha. Shuddha nam. Shuddha nam. Shuddha nam means when the name is pure. So here it's talking about shuddha ashaya. Shuddha ashaya. Parisham shuddha. So this shuddha ashaya means completely purified consciousness. This is the plane of shuddha sattva. Shuddha sattva. Sattva of course means goodness. Sattvam rajas tamaya ti. Guna prakriti. Sambhavai. So there are different qualities in nature, and we can study that. We can see that nature has different qualities. Everyone is attracted to goodness. Just like we say, oh, I met a good person today. If you ask about someone, immediately they say, oh, he's quite good. He's not a bad chap. Not a bad fellow, isn't it? He's not nasty. He's not wonderful either. He's mediocre. So sometimes immediately you want to find out about someone. You want to see if they're good, isn't it? And not just people. Even food. You know, you can say there's prasadam, but is it good prasadam? Isn't it? Suppose we have boiled turnips every day for 1 month. And even though it's prasadam, we may not be so attracted. Because turnips are not in goodness. They're in the kind of lower modes. So they're not very attractive for us. Of course, some people like turnips. But anyway, those are generally people in lower class, or onions. People like onions. But Vaishnavas generally don't like onions. They're not attracted to onions. It's repulsive. But mushrooms also, repulsive. So there are foods in different qualities. There are people in different qualities. Everything has attraction and repulsion according to the qualities. You see? There's attraction and repulsion according to the quality. But, as they say, one man's food is another man's poison. So those who are in the lower modes, they actually are repulsed by the type of food we eat. And they would much rather have some poor old dead chicken and poor old dead animal. And they mix it up with all sorts of pungent things, horrible things. Actually, if you see their food, it's horrible. But they're mad after that food. Garlic and onions and all these horrible things. They're mad after that. So, one can understand that even in our own lives, previous to becoming devotee, maybe some of these things were attractive. So, therefore, we can understand that the consciousness is changing. There's different qualities of attraction and repulsion according to different types of consciousness. If your consciousness is in the lower modes, then you're attracted to things that exist in that lower mode. Just like the hog is very enthusiastic about eating all sorts of rubbish. In Vrindavan, the hog puts his nose in the sewage and he's there all day long. And he goes crazy after stool. He loves it. He gets so excited, even if you're... sometimes people are in the bushes, and the hog comes, he'll chase them. Because they have to run away, because he gets so excited. You can't, until you see such an experience, then you see how excited he can become. Now, for a human, the same thing is repulsive. How could you think of eating someone's food? Suppose your mother said, today we have stool for breakfast, dog stool. You would not be attracted, but the hog is excited. It's like saying there's a Maha feast today. So this is different types of senses, different types of consciousness, different types of adulteration of the consciousness. Everyone is adulterated, but there are different types of adulteration. So even practically, we don't have to be big philosophers to see that everyone is attracted, particularly in human form of life, they're attracted to goodness. You don't see one cow saying to the other cow, is that a good cow or a bad cow? Or a goat getting together and saying, listen, we have to make all these goats good. They're all misbehaving. We have to bring them to a better platform. Or a bunch of dogs getting together and having a conference on how to remove this biting mentality in the dog. Suppose a bunch of dogs go together and say, listen, this biting of each other is not very conducive for our happiness in this planet. So let us try to eliminate biting each other. There's no question. Dogs actually, by nature, they're aggressive. As you could not have a bunch of crows deciding that chasing after garbage and rubbish in the dustbins or even chasing after dead creatures is no longer acceptable in the crow community. And anyone caught doing such abominable activities shall be arrested by the crow army and taken to the crow court and put into the crow jail. These things are not going on. Because in the lower species, they act according to their nature. That nature is the end-all and be-all of their existence. They cannot move from that nature. They are prakriti kriyamanani guna karma. Guna karma sarvashaha. They have this nature, their gunas and their karmas. So these different species are simply different adulterations of consciousness. They're not, as Darwin was trying to say, different bodies. Bodies are secondary thing, but the adulteration of consciousness is the first thing to be studied. So therefore we have consciousness and goodness, and that is on the heavenly planets. On the heavenly planets, just like we can understand, people want to go to heaven, they don't want to go to hell. There's no religion where they go to pray to go to hell, is it? You don't find all these people gathering on Sunday, my dear Lord, please, please let me go to hell. Or when someone dies, oh yes, he went straight to hell. They always say, Mummy went to heaven to join Daddy. Daddy's there in heaven and Mummy went to join Daddy in heaven. Because they hope that they went to a good place. They want to go to a good place. So that idea of goodness is that good things should be going on. Good things. So what are good things? Things which are conducive for our happiness. That's the idea. We identify good as being that which is favorable, that which is auspicious, that which is conducive to our happiness. That we call good. And that thing which is not conducive, which is not favorable, which is not auspicious for us, we call it bad. So this is the materialistic concept of goodness. People generally, if you study their idea of goodness, it's always what's conducive, just like social moral codes. Thou shalt not steal your neighbor's wife. That's considered to be good. He's a good man. He didn't steal his neighbor's wife. He didn't murder his enemy. Or he wasn't violent or didn't steal. These are all considered to be so-called good. But actually, if you study all of those so-called good things, they are things which would interfere with the flow of society. Just like driving on the left side of the road. You can say it's good to drive on the left side of the road. You are a good citizen. You stop at the red light. But even a murderer will stop at a red light. Even a mass murderer would stop at a red light. Would drive on the left side of the road. It doesn't mean one is good, it means that it's conducive to moral, civilized behavior. They have what they call civil codes, morality. That which is conducive, because what it is? It is a combined agreement. Just like I am interested, I'm completely interested in what is conducive for me. So I want to lord it over material nature, and I get together with a load of other lords, tiny lords, and we all agree together. If we want to lord it over material nature, we're all going to have to agree to act together. So this is called honor amongst thieves. So the idea is that by being moral, by being good, by being nice, by being kind, by being gentle, we can all get on a lot better with each other. If we were all running around hitting each other with clubs and guns and knives and robbing and raping and pilfering and stealing and cheating and lying, then society would become animal. Animal society, worse than animal. And we see that sometimes when there's a breakdown in so-called government, the governing principle in society breaks down, then it becomes anarchy. It becomes chaos. Looting and raping and murdering and all of these things become prominent in those societies. You'll find few societies where the government collapse, where they become more peaceful, more kind to each other, more gentle, more tolerant, more... No. So generally, governments are social, what we call mechanisms. They allow for conducive exploitation. In other words, I want to exploit, you want to exploit, we all want to exploit, so let's work together to exploit. Let's not exploit each other. Because after all, the target is to exploit nature. And within that framework of exploiting nature, we have to work together, because it's a big thing. To exploit nature is a big thing. It needs a lot of work, it needs a lot of energy. So let's have some civil moral code. So this is not really goodness. This is just simply another type of kaitava, cheating, or materialistic activity. What is actually being explained there is madharmano gunayatai. When one is fully qualified with all these transcendental attributes, and his consciousness is thus completely purified, he is immediately attracted simply by hearing my name and hearing my transcendental qualities. So, what we're talking about in Krishna consciousness is actually Suddha Sattva, Suddha, pure, unadulterated consciousness. Then one will be attracted to Krishna. Otherwise, Krishna remains unattractive. You cannot have some sentimental attraction to Krishna and think that that's spiritual. That's just another. Just like we may say, oh, Krishna looks nice. But how nice? Or Krishna is wonderful. How wonderful? You see, we can only have materialistic idea that, oh, I think Krishna looks nice. Matter of fact, it reminds me of a girl I used to know. You could have that idea. Just like Prabhupada said, one person was sitting in a lecture by one pandit, Srimad Bhagavatam class. So he mentioned the name Radharani. He said, oh, I used to have a girlfriend called Radharani. She was really nice. So he started meditating on Radharani. But no ecstasy was coming, but he was thinking, yeah, we used to go here and there. Actually, she was the wife of a butcher. And I stole her away from that man. So all these thoughts were flooding his mind on hearing the name Radha. So sometimes also we hear the name Krishna, we think, or we look at Krishna and we think, oh, Krishna looks nice. But these are not what has been explained here. What has been explained here is when one is on the plane of Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha means this absolute plane of consciousness. Consciousness is originally Shuddha. It's Shuddha, it's pure. Consciousness is originally pure. It has no need of any addition from the material world. There is nothing needed from the material world to support consciousness. Rather, the entire material creation is supported by consciousness. You understand the difference? There is nothing required in the material world to support your Krishna consciousness. Rather, the material world is completely supported by your consciousness. Just like this body, you are supporting your body by your consciousness. But your consciousness doesn't need your body. It doesn't need it. You think it does. But actually it doesn't. Consciousness doesn't need anything material. That's why the Goswamis, they showed by practical example, Raghunath Das Goswami was eating one little piece of butter every 2 days. And Prabhupada said sometimes he would forget. He was so immersed in his consciousness, pure Shuddha Nam. Shuddha Nam, he was chanting Shuddha Nam. He had no need of anything. He was not even worried about the condition of the body. Raghunath Das was sitting on the 115, 18 degrees sun, chanting his mala. If you've been to India and seen that sun in the summer months, it's intolerable. You can't even go out for 10 minutes. But he was sitting there all day long, chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, chasing Krishna in his mind. So Krishna came along and personally held an umbrella over his head. Or Radharani. Was it Radharani? You know that story? I think it was Radharani. Or was it Krishna? It was Radharani. I think so. I remember that story. So the point is that on the absolute plane of Shuddhanam, or Krishna consciousness, there's no need of anything material. But that does not mean that we imitate Raghunath Das. We are not on that platform. If we try to eat a lump of butter every 2 days, we'll probably end up eating a whole packet. And mind a lump. How big is a lump? You can eat half a room of butter. Isn't it? He said a lump, but I think, you know, you can have big lumps. Or smaller. And then you think, well, if I mix this butter with some halwa, that'll be even better. So the point is, we can't imitate the great transcendental. But we can see by their example that there are no need of material things. There's no need. The consciousness is not supported by the material world. The ashraya, what we call Bhagavat ashraya, and this name also, ashraya, consciousness is supported by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. There is no difference between our consciousness and Krishna consciousness. There is no difference between us and Krishna. We are exactly the same in quality. This was explained by also Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. He explained that there are different qualities of Krishna. If you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find so many qualities. And one, his body is well constructed. So that's always an idea of quality of someone, if they have a good constructed body, isn't it? If someone doesn't, then they're not so attractive. If their nose is big and their ears are droopy and their eyes are crossing like this, they're not so well constructed. So we say, oh, they're what's called deformed or handicapped or whatever. So we like that idea. That's immediately one is attracted by a perfect body. Just like we're always on the lookout to find a beautiful, perfect woman, isn't it? The nature of man is he's always looking for the perfect woman. And the woman is looking for the perfect man. Isn't it? Just like the male elephant is looking for the perfect female elephant. We're not attracted to the perfect female elephant. We might accidentally see a perfect female elephant. But we don't get excited. Because our consciousness is different. We're attracted to the physical body of a woman. Oh, we're attracted, vice versa. So therefore, the perfect construction of the body, these are qualities. So Krishna has beautiful body. But what type of body? Not a material body. Therefore, we can't really fully discuss how beautiful Krishna's body is. His body has all auspicious symptoms. His body is beautiful. His body is very glorious. His body is very strong. And he always looks like a boy of 16. He is well versed in various languages. He is truthful. So these are qualities, all attractive. Someone who is very truthful, we're very attracted to. Someone who is very eloquent in speaking. He's very decorated with pleasing words. He is expert in speaking. He's very learned. He's very intelligent. He is influential. He is joyful. He is cunning. He is expert. He is grateful. He is firmly convinced. So all of these things are there. And Radharani also has nice qualities. She has qualities, sweetness personified. She's a fresh young girl. As soon as you see a fresh young girl, sweet girl, immediately your heart melts, isn't it? Your heart melts, even a big, big animal type man. He can be attracted very quickly to a beautiful, sweet girl, shy, humble like this, always brightly smiling, possessing all auspicious marks, etc. So what are the qualities? They are the qualities of a personality. So when we say the qualities of Krishna, we mean the qualities of Krishna's personality. There's no difference between Krishna's personality and Krishna. In the material world, there's a difference between consciousness and the body. But in the spiritual world, there's no difference between consciousness and the body. So the body is the manifestation. When you see these pastimes of Krishna, they are the manifestation of Krishna's consciousness. That's why they're called Krishna consciousness. You understand? They're a manifestation of Krishna's consciousness. Everything we see is a manifestation of Krishna's consciousness. So therefore, when we study Krishna's pastimes, we are actually associating with Krishna's consciousness. Because there is no difference between the external activities of Krishna and the internal activities of Krishna. Just like there is no difference between the abode of Krishna and Krishna. So when we call Goloka, we are talking about the personality of Krishna. We are talking about the consciousness of Krishna. So these things have to be understood. Therefore, when one comes to the plane of Shuddha, then he's automatically attracted to these pastimes because he's simultaneously one and different from Krishna. So when we hear the pastimes of Krishna, we actually enter into those pastimes. This is Kaivalya. This is the meaning of oneness with Krishna. It's not that you're hearing something and you go, oh, that sounds really nice. Ooh. Lord Chaitanya, he said, my mind is Vrindavan. You see, he didn't say, I'm thinking of Vrindavan. He said, my mind is Vrindavan. Ravi, isn't it? My mind is Vrindavan. So that is called Shuddha, pure consciousness, when one's mind becomes the playground of the Supreme Personality of God. See, this is Krishna consciousness, when your mind becomes the playground. Therefore, we see many examples in the associates of Lord Chaitanya and Chaitanya, where when they would mention one verse, then they would go into ecstasy for hours. Lord Nityananda sometimes for 4 days on hearing one verse. You see? Whereas we can listen to the whole Bhagavatam, we just fall asleep. So the mind must become Vrindavan, and then that is the real meaning of Krishna consciousness. Not that there's some separation between consciousness and Vrindavan. The separation is an adulteration. If there's anything in your mind except Vrindavan, then you have adulterated consciousness. You see? It's not that Vrindavan is an adulteration of your consciousness, or an imposition on your consciousness, or that chanting the holy name is an imposition on your mind. No. Actually, all the material world is an imposition on your mind. Just like when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was once asked, is there anything opposed in this world, opposed to the teachings of the Bhagavad? He said, every thought that comes out of the mind of man is opposed to the message of the Bhagavad. It's a very strong statement. Every single thought that comes out of the mind of man. Why? Because everything is adulterated that comes out of the mind of man. So therefore, anything which is adulterated, just like if you put one drop of poison in the milk, you can't say that it's only a drop. What's the harm in a drop? Isn't it? One drop of poison can wipe out 5 people, 10 people. Cyanide. You know how strong cyanide is? Very powerful. There's some drops that you can put in a reservoir and kill everyone. So you can say, oh, it's only one drop. I'm only a little bit in Maya, Prabhu. I'm not a lot in Maya. But we should understand that any Maya cannot be tolerated. by the devotee, because it's an adulteration on his pure attachment for Krishna. Therefore, the symptom of advancement in spiritual life is one becomes intolerable to anything which is adverse to Krishna consciousness. One becomes intolerable. So people then say, oh, he's a fanatic. We found a fanatic. Haribo, a fanatic. We caught one. Oh, let's throw him out of ISKCON. A fanatic. This guy gets up every morning, 2 o'clock, chanting rounds. Fanatic. He's a fanatic, Prabhu, yeah. This has become the mood now in ISKCON. If you want any enthusiasm for renunciation or preaching or anything like that, oh yeah, Brahmachari fanatics, watch them, woman haters. But that's not, we are not, one should be fanatical because the mind is fanatically attached to Krishna. The actual Goswamis were mad. They were considered mad. If you read the prayers to the 6 Goswamis, they were running here and there. Hey Govinda, hey Giriraj! They were running sometimes madly towards Govardhan, falling over, and unconsciously, foam coming to their mouth, shaking and shivering, hurtfulation. You see? Lord Chaitanya, what is the meaning of Chaitanya, Charitamrita? It means the transcendental manifestation of the transcendental energy in its full eternal principle. Chaitanya Charitam, that means, in the Chaitanya means consciousness, Charitam means the plane of consciousness in its full manifestation. Everyone is searching for consciousness, but they don't have a clue because consciousness is mixed with adulteration. So Chaitanya came to show, here is consciousness, have a look at it, study it. This is consciousness. And what is that? Lord Chaitanya said, my mind is Vrindavan. Vrindavan is the ultimate plane of consciousness because it is the play yard, the playground of God. You see? Consciousness means God. How can you separate consciousness from God? You cannot separate. If you try to separate consciousness from God, then that means God is something separate from consciousness. How can God be separate from Himself? You see, God is consciousness. Therefore we say, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, Anadi Anadi Govinda Sarva Karna Karna, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. So Lord Brahma is acknowledging, here is the Ishvara. What is this quality? Sat. Chit Ananda. Sat. That which exists eternally. Chit. That which is full of cognizance. Just like we are cognizant, we are conscious of our own little tiny frame, our little body. We are tiny, we are conscious of our tiny mind. We are chit. But Krishna is what? He is the ocean, the reservoir of all consciousness. He has unlimited consciousness. There is no end or no beginning or no middle. There is no measurement to Krishna consciousness, to Krishna's consciousness. So naturally, when we become pure, we become absorbed in the ocean of consciousness. That is called Krishna consciousness. Therefore Lord Chaitanya came to show that plane. What is that plane? And that plane is Ananda. Ananda Moya Vyasha. Ananda Moya. We want Ananda. We are mad after pleasure. Ananda. But we are trying to get Ananda from Nirananda. The material world is Asit. Achit, sorry. Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. That is the nature of Maya, material world. It is temporal, full of ignorance and full of misery. You study it. You can take your microscope, telescope, or you can go around with your, what's this? Huh? Magnifying glass, like Sherlock Holmes. You can go around and see. Is this temporary? Oh yes, this is temporary. Is this miserable? Oh yes, this is miserable. Huh? Is this ignorant? So look around, see, what is there? There's ignorance. Is it? or is it not? Is this some sort of fantasy philosophy? Is there not ignorance? Everywhere there is ignorance. Is there misery? Everywhere there is misery. And is everything temporary? Everything is temporary. These are the things which are opposing our existence. These are the things which are vitally against our consciousness. Consciousness hates ignorance. It hates it. It deplores it. It's embarrassed by it. It fights ignorance. All of the great so-called philosophers and the great schools of thought, they all say, fight ignorance! Isn't it? We have to stand and fight this ignorance. Because they know that all the problems are based on ignorance. They know that. Therefore, there are so many theories, so many isms and schisms. This ism and that ism. And let's solve this problem because that was caused by this ignorance. Isn't it? Just like communism was caused by this and that was caused by that. Capitalism is evil. Bring in communism. That's also evil. Why? Because it's all based upon misconception of the body. So therefore everyone is fighting ignorance but in the wrong way. They don't know what the real ignorance is. They think that ignorance means not to understand material nature, how to enjoy it. If you're not very good at enjoying material nature, you're considered a fool. You see, that's what they classify as ignorance. Well, what we're saying ignorance is anything which does not have relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anything which is separated from God, that is ignorance. So therefore, their so-called knowledge is ignorance for us. Maya pita jnanam asuram bhav masuta. So their maya pita jnan, their knowledge, is so-called knowledge, is stolen by ignorance. So we have no interest in it. So where is their misery? We see it everywhere. Misery is adhidevakadi, bodhigadi, atmaka. Misery is everywhere. Misery is from the body, from the mind, from material nature itself. We see that. We have observed that. And we should actually be very astutely aware of that. And one cannot argue of the impermanence of nature. Even the most atheistic scientists accept that nature is impermanent. Isn't it? Nobody out there is going to say that nature itself has a complete permanence. They can say it lasts a long time. But simply by the movement of time, everything is changing. Everything is changing. So therefore there is impermanence. So we are not talking of a fantasy plane, we are talking of Shuddha consciousness. Shuddha sattva. Sattva. Sat. Sat. Sat means eternal. Or that which exists. Not that which is coming and going. That which is what we call in the material world vyakta avyakta, Krishna says. Manifest and non-manifest. No. Shuddha sattva means the plane of pure consciousness, the plane of pure existence. Krishna consciousness. So therefore we have to strive for pure Krishna consciousness, and in the beginning that consciousness is contaminated by different qualities. Passion. There is devotees who are very passionate. There are devotees who are ignorant. There are devotees who are... there are 81 different types of devotional service, all based upon the mixture of the three modes of nature. So don't think because I'm devotee, I have automatically reached my destination. That is not a very good idea. Actually, devotional service is a continuous process, gradual process, to come to the platform. But Prabhupada said, how do you test? We must have a thermometer, just like if we are in hospital disease, they bring us thermometer all the time to check. What is our thermometer? How much we are attracted to Krishna. When Lord Chaitanya went into the temple of Jagannath, he was unconscious within seconds. He could only say, yuck, yuck, yuck. That's deity worship. You see? That is deity worship. So he showed us, this is how you worship Krishna. He's glorified. 500 years later, we're still praising him for this deity worship. Isn't it? So this is real. When Lord Chaitanya gave his Bhagavatam to Gadadha, he couldn't read anything because it was covered in tears. Every time he would read Bhagavatam, he would soak his Bhagavatam. So when he gave it, no one could read it because it had been washed away. Because in those days everything was written by hand. So when Lord Chaitanya would read his Bhagavatam, the tears would pour out so much that his book was destroyed. But when we read Bhagavatam, we destroy it by dribble. Dribbling. So that's the difference. The tears have to come, not the dribble. So this is the difference between our consciousness. So we see that therefore we have to remove this contamination in the consciousness. And that is what the process in the beginning, sadhana, sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means regulated bhakti. Because if we have unregulated bhakti, then the bhakti becomes ineffective. We cannot have, the mind is too powerful. Krishna says, mama maya dharateya. The mind is too powerful. You cannot just allow the mind freedom. So therefore we have to regulate the mind. Rise early, chant our rounds nicely, hear very nicely. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam nicely. Take nice Krishna prasad. Very nice process. And automatically one becomes utsaham. One becomes enthusiastic. Utsaham. Because the spiritual consciousness is coming out. Then there's no attraction for sleeping and doing all sorts of abominable things. Devotees have no attraction for going to cinemas or chasing after young girls are going to hear them. No attraction. Because they're tasting Krishna. So therefore all other attractions fall away. But if one is not tasting Krishna, then automatically these other things invade the mind. And one starts worrying about, oh, poor little old me, I'm unhappy. He automatically feels invigorated, enthused to hear about Krishna, to chant. He cannot stop chanting. 24 hours a day, right? Haridas Thakur would chant 23 and a half hours a day, Prabhupada says. Half hour for doing everything else. Eating and sleeping. You see? But we are capable of sleeping 23 and a half hours a day. And half hour to get everything else. So therefore we have to see the thermometer. How it is changing. Gradually we should become, Prabhupada said, this sadhana bhakti, regulated devotion, should become gradually raga. What is the meaning of raga? Raga means attachment, when there's some raga. Just like when you listen to a nice raga, isn't it? Some attachment comes there. So raga should come. Raga means attachment. One's automatically attracted to hearing and chanting. That is the real sign. Why? Because consciousness is directly affected by hearing. Just like now I'm speaking, you're affected, isn't it? Direct. Because hearing goes straight into the heart. So raga means one is attracted to hearing and chanting. And then, just like the gopis, when they were looking at Krishna, they were so attracted, they were cursing Lord Brahma. You are a foolish creator. They were chastising Brahma. You are a foolish creator. You made these eyes blink. That's how much they were Krishna conscious. They couldn't tolerate the idea of blinking. So that moment they were blinking, they were not seeing Krishna. So Prabhupada said, this is the mood of the devotee, that for one moment he can't tolerate anything which is not connected with Krishna. That is a sign of a devotee, that one becomes so enthusiastic that one cannot think of anything. Just like before I joined, I read the Bhagavad Gita. And one thing that stuck in my mind was that Prabhupada said a devotee doesn't like to do anything where Krishna is not involved. So I thought that was very powerful. Because I could understand everything I did, Krishna wasn't involved. So then I thought, well, I'm in trouble. Because I'm doing so many things Krishna's not involved. So from then I vowed, no, I have to do whatever. I won't do anything where Krishna's not involved. So then my friends would say, hey, you're coming out, we're going here, we're going out. I said, no, no, Krishna's not involved. I'm not going. Even just by hearing that. So that, how powerful. So one who becomes Krishna conscious, then he cannot tolerate to forget Krishna even for a moment. That is the sign. So Just like when someone asked Prabhupada, how do I know who is Guru? Prabhupada said, find someone who is mad after Krishna. You see, mad. Cannot tolerate one moment to be. Just like with Srila Prabhupada, we observed every moment Krishna conscious, every single moment of the day, Krishna conscious. Okay, let's finish here. Any questions at all? Giri, how can you ask questions? You're all sewn up. Yeah.
The human form, you can change the quality of my nectar, if I want to change it. Sometimes we think, well, this is my nectar, I can't change it, this is the way I am. And also we find practically that although we try to change, but we think there's a bunch of
Well, you see, what you've got to understand is that it doesn't mean that if you become a devotee that your ears start changing shape, is it? It's not that your ears go this shape and then they start going, your nose starts changing. It's not like that, or that your mouth changes, or your legs get longer. There's nowhere where we read in the Rupa Goswami where it says, by chanting every day, one's legs gradually grow longer. So the point is that it's not a question of changing like we think. You see, Krishna consciousness is not dependent on any material cause and effect. You see, it is a transcendental plane. So therefore, what is always advocated in the Vedic literature is that one must dovetail. Now that means one must utilize whatever one has gotten or whatever has been given to you by Krishna. You can utilize that thing. Just like if you have a car and you use it in Krishna's service, it may be, let's say, an old Escort. It doesn't mean it becomes Rolls Royce. You see? But by using it in Krishna's service, then automatically you are using that energy in the service of the energetic. You understand? So that energy is then being reunited with its original source, Krishna. So similarly, all of us have been given a particular type of body. The body is like a vehicle, and we are stuck in that vehicle. We're stuck here. We cannot actually move around from one body to another. We're stuck with this body. But as Prabhupada always said, we have to make the best use of bad bargain. We have got a bad bargain, there's no question. Bad bargain. But make good use of bad bargain. Then gradually, the inner consciousness becomes transcendentally situated so as that one's connection with the material body becomes actually, detached. Gradually one becomes detached. So you can see it practically. Just like before I became a devotee, my body was doing so many things. Now I make sure my body is serving Krishna. So I become detached from my materialistic activity. It's not that my body has to change. But the point is that I, by gradual purification of devotional service, become more and more detached from bodily attachments. In other words, I'm more, less and less affected by the material concept of life, less and less affected by material sensual activity, less and less affected by the attachment between the senses and the sense object. So in that way, I can utilize that useless body in the service of Krishna. I can utilize it, and that way the body becomes purified. So the body no longer becomes an adulteration to the consciousness. It becomes a vehicle by which one situates oneself on the spiritual platform. Just like before, my hands wanted to touch beautiful woman. Now they wanted to wave chamar whistle, isn't it? Or offer incense to Krishna. So hand is doing the same thing, but it's touching different things. My eyes want to see. Before it wanted to see these material objects. Now it wants to see Krishna, deity. Or my ears wanted to hear what was the latest Beatles song or something like that. Now it wants to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita. So hearing is so, that way the energy, material energy, becomes completely spiritualized. So one has a spiritual body, even though it appears like a material body. So the change is internal. Externally, it is not so much, although it's there also, we can see. Once the internal becomes changed, the external becomes changed. And it's a fact that actually, one spiritualizes inside, then his body becomes more spiritual. Even the change is there also. But generally speaking, nature, habit is second nature. So we have, all of us have conditioning, which we have to work through. We have to utilize that conditioning. Just like Arjuna was Kshatriya, so therefore he utilized his Kshatriya spirit in the service of Krishna. Not that he gave up being a Kshatriya and became a monk in a monastery. That way that material side became part and parcel of his spiritual side, because it became one with Krishna's desire. The whole object of spiritualizing matter is to make matter one with Krishna's desire. At the moment, matter is separated from Krishna's desire. Matter is being utilized to fulfill the living entity's desire. Any other questions? Yes, the Goswamis were situated on the spiritual plane, not the material plane. Well, the material plane survives on the spiritual plane. So therefore, they there were, because of being such elevated Vaishnavas, they could exist on the spiritual plane. They had no need of the material plane. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Apranam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So a person who feels dirty is more enthusiastic for showering. It's not that he thinks, because I'm so dirty, therefore I can never go near a shower. That's stupid, isn't it? The shower is there to clean you. And then you're thinking, oh, I'm so dirty, I could never have a shower. What sort of mentality is that? So I'm so fallen. Oh, therefore I could never take the Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness is there to make you not fallen. So if you really believe you're the most fallen, then you'll be the most enthusiastic. Just like if I feel I'm the most sick, then I'm the one who should go to the doctor. Not that, oh, I'm so sick, I should never go to a doctor. People who are less sick than me, they should go to the doctor. Or people who are less dirty than me, they should take a shower. I'm the most dirty, so I shouldn't have a shower. So if you pray to Krishna, Krishna, I am the most fallen. I'm more qualified than all of these other guys. That's very nice. The qualification is I'm Jagai Madai. I'm the world in the school. This is the mood of Krishna Das Tanaraj's Swami. So therefore you will not find anyone more sinful than me. Therefore, please, my qualification is first. You accept me first. All these guys get behind me.
Yeah.
The Prabhupada also said there's two causes of fall down in spiritual life. One is to think I'm qualified, And the other is to think that I can never be qualified. Because then you're thinking that Krishna doesn't have the power. Krishna is so weak that he doesn't have the power to purify. Just like if there's a drop of urine on the ground and the sun is shining 115 degrees. And then you think, oh, that sun is so weak it can't evaporate this urine. For the sun, evaporating urine is no problem. But for the urine to evaporate itself, that would be a big problem, wouldn't it? So therefore, the sun is powerful, it can evaporate everything. So you can't think that, oh, I'm so fallen, oh, Krishna, it's really a shame you don't have enough power to purify me. It's a shame you're so inadequate, therefore let me go away and enjoy life. But you should be thinking that actually Krishna is so powerful. A billion means he can deliver in one microsecond. So my disqualification should not be projected as some inadequacy in Krishna. It's simply a question that if Krishna sees my sincerity, he can deliver. A million billion Jagan Madhav. No problem. And no effort also. So that sometimes becomes an excuse. Oh, I'm so fallen. Let me go to the pub and have a pint. Or let me go back to my girlfriend. Or let me smoke some cigarette. Or let me go and watch the movie. Or look at the magazine and all that. Oh, I could never follow such a strict process of Christian life.
What if the devotee thinks that Krishna is powerful, he's easy, of course, I'm the divinity. But that by that verse, then, but then there's me as well. Then there's the devotee side as well. He's trying. So, and by that verse, it's that if he's too attached to some qualification, then his determination is there to actually take certain consequences which can purify.
Yeah.
So, how does he, like, he's thinking, he's maybe thinking, oh, so, but I'm...
That's the same thing, isn't it? If you really believe that you're too attached to take the Krishna consciousness, then you have to see that, what is the solution to that? The solution is to become purified. So to become purified means you have to follow the process of purification. It's no good just saying... It's like, you know, Prabhupada used the example, someone's embracing a tree, and they're saying, let me go, tree, let me go. Why are you holding me here, you tree? You're such a big tree, you're holding me so strong, I can't go. Still, energy is neutral. It's not active in the sense that you think. Material energy is facilitating. The super soul is facilitating the journey of the human energy. I am situated in the heart. For me come remembrance and forgetfulness. So all of that ignorance of the material world is given by super soul. Through the agency of Maya, material energy. Krishna says this Maya is working under my direction, producing all moving and non-moving. So therefore Krishna is in the heart. So if you want to become more and more involved in the material energy, you can make complex arrangements for your body. And if you want him, he makes immediate arrangements for him. Choice is yours. But nature, just like Prabhupada said, if you go in a sweet shop and you say, okay, give me 1 pound of licorice also. Someone else comes in and says, I want to buy the yeast today. The shop is not to be blamed for giving one a big yeast today and the other some liquid shelter. It's not the shop. This person wants. The desire is there. Therefore, as man proposes, God disposes. As we desire, Krishna fulfills. Krishna says, I am fulfilling desires of all living entities from time immemorial. So therefore, if we want to become more and more impure, then Krishna will help us. And if we want to become more and more pure, Krishna will help us. Be neutral. Be situated neutral. Just like if you want to become more and more criminal, then you can use things in a criminal way. And if you want to become a better citizen, you can use things in a civil way. But if you use things in a criminal way, then the government will punish you. But you can't blame the government. Oh, it's all your fault, government. No, they say, well, Other people are able to utilize the same energy in a nice way. You wanted to be antisocial. You wanted to be a thief. So we punished you for that. But if they, so the judge said, hang him. You can't blame the judge. Hey, judge, you're very cruel. Simply, he's rewarding. He's rewarding according to activity. According to our action and reaction, Krishna is rewarding. So we have to change our action, then Krishna will change our results. We have to change our activity, Krishna will change the result. But it's no good not wanting to change our activity and then blaming Krishna. Saying, oh, why am I always at Maya, Krishna? As if Krishna has put you in Maya for his own pleasure. Krishna's not put you in Maya because he wants to see you in Maya for his entertainment. You're in Maya because you want to be in Maya. No other reason in the world. Whatever ignorance, whatever misery, whatever illusion is because you want that. Or wanted it in the past. Or you want it now or you want it in the future. These are all the different seeds of desire.
At that point that you made about walking in the past, because I was just thinking, you know, different people they take the devotional service according to their condition, some people find it more difficult. Like, you know that example.
So that's like the fan, you know, the fan, you unplug the fan, it doesn't stop immediately. So one should have the patience that, yes, this fan will take some time, it was going very fast. Just like a car is going 100,000 miles an hour down a hill. You don't expect it's just going to, just because you switch off the engine, it's going to stop. It's going to take time. You have to say, all right, you know, gradually, as long as I don't hit too many things on the way down, gradually it'll come to its own stop. So, similarly, we unplugged the fan, but, you know, still the fan was going at such a speed that it may even take a lifetime. But at least it'll come. One should have faith that it will come. Prabhupada said, one should be convinced that ultimately I will become Krishna conscious. So one should be very patient and not lose, what do you call it, enthusiasm, because it's not gaining. Because our business is also not to gain. We're not gaining, we're here to serve. If Krishna wants, we can be purified. If he doesn't want, and there's a reason why we're not becoming purified. We may have some more pure desires, and therefore we have to be aware of that. But the process is perfect. Your application is imperfect. So, you know, sometimes externally we think that we want something, but internally we don't. It's not true we want. We think we want. Everyone thinks I want to be a pure devotee. What we really want is we want the results of being a pure devotee. That's different. Just like many Christians want the kingdom of God, but they don't care a hoot about God. So if God's there, that's an added fungus if he pops up from behind the bushes. That's an added thing. Main thing is we want the kingdom. We want to be there in heaven and all the angels and demons and all this stuff. That's the world. You can have nice things going on. They don't even know of those ones. You must be nice. Then you thought we better than this. But the idea of discussing God, oh God, not that God again. Oh my God, he's up in the clouds without riding. Don't worry about him. They even say now they're trying to make the idea that originally God created the universe, but then it somehow died in the process of God. It's going on. Or he created it and it became too powerful for us. He couldn't end it all, and just sort of went back to the garden so that it'd be apples. Okay, Jai Shri Prabhupada.